Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare delivery and technology. My guest today is Kyle Culver. Kyle is the Director, Emerging Technologies at Humana, and co-founder of the Synaptic Health Alliance. One reason I'm especially glad to talk to Kyle today is he really is a thought leader in the application of blockchain technologies to the healthcare industry. Kyle, welcome to the Tate Chronicles.
Thank you for having me. Really do appreciate the opportunity.
You know, Kyle, I'd say 3 years ago, we were at some type of, for lack of a better term, peak of inflated expectations. Everybody was jumping into blockchain, trying to work that into their description of what their mission was from a company or entity basis. And it was being thrown around quite a bit. And hopefully things have settled down a little bit now. So before we go into the details a little bit, tell me a little bit about the Synaptic Health Alliance. How was that formed and who's involved in that?
Sure. So the Synaptic Health Alliance is focused on, you know, really bringing together some of the leaders across healthcare and to demonstrate, you know, how we can use these decentralized technologies like blockchain in order to collaborate more efficiently and solve some of these problems that plague healthcare. And so the intent with that group was to really focus on making progress on a single use case. And that single use case that we started with is the provider directory quality issues. You know, so if you're familiar with provider directory, this is, you know, Dr. Smith is on Market Street and you call his phone number to make an appointment. Are they accepting new patients? So that type of data, which is public data, is very difficult, you know, for these members of the Alliance and healthcare in general to keep high quality. And so because of that, we saw that as a big opportunity for us to collaborate on something that we didn't see as a competitive advantage with public data. So it brought down kind of that barrier to entry to work together. And then the intention there was that, hey, if we can show how we can do this, we can overcome whatever barriers are there to work together on this use case, it should really enable us to work on other use cases. And so this group right now, it includes Humana, includes Aetna, MultiPlan, Quest Diagnostics, United Health Group, Providence, Corvell, Cognizant, and a handful of others. And so with that, you know, we've demonstrated that we can share data, that we can crowdsource that data, and that we can be more efficient through the crowdsourcing of this directory data.
And I guess one thing that makes it an appropriate use case would be the fact that one of the foundational benefits of blockchain technology is once data is written, it cannot be changed. It's locked into a block. So it's really a ledger or list. Supposedly, with the right elements involved, a bad actor cannot get in there like they can into a typical database and make some changes. Would you agree with that, Kyle? In this case, you're talking about.
The intention was, you know, in using this, that it allows us to have that transparency of who's doing what, as well as the decentralized ownership. And so, you know, it's not that Humana owns this or United owns it, right? We equally own this and have the same level of access. And then we have transparency of, you know, the audit trail around the data. And then the other aspect, that there is an incentive model, so we don't expect this to work altruistically. And so there's an incentive model that's keeping track of the activities that add value or where members are consuming value from the alliance. And so with that, keeping track of that, so those incentives, you know, contribute to the treasury, which then goes to the group. So this isn't viewed as a revenue stream. It's viewed as a utility, right, for these companies to be able to work more efficiently together.
And so without blockchain technology, which one phrase that I've heard people use is that you're actually outsourcing trust to the blockchain code. And so if you were not able to do this among these different partners who are part of this initiative, they would each be having to do it individually then, correct?
Correct. So today, you know, as with many activities, companies are doing that duplicatively and independently of each other, or they're relying upon a vendor or set of vendors that are doing that on their behalf. And so, again, the intention with Synaptic wasn't to say, stop doing what you're doing, but in order to, you know, allow us to do that crowdsourcing very efficiently and have more of a divide and conquer approach. Because there are a ton of data points that need to be managed here. And what we've seen are some firms are really good with certain data points, and then other data points are more difficult for them to capture. And so how do we make that to where, you know, the company that's closest to that information is incentivized to share it, or the peer person that gets it, you know, that they can share that in a timely manner, and they're incentivized to share it as soon as they get an update that would be valuable to the rest of the members.
The whole concept of using blockchain, hopefully, is that it works in the background. It's totally invisible. Hopefully. But there seem to be some great use cases in healthcare, but there's some still some issues around it. 3 years ago, I thought a slam dunk use case would be around provider credentialing. Hospitals have to, or providers have to re-credential every certain number of years to stay on the staff and when they join a new practice, and that involves people sending out faxes and making phone calls to, certify, but to get accurate information about where they serve their residency or graduate from nursing school or all that kind of information. And so that is duplicated many, many, many times through the life of a provider. And so if that initial research could be locked down in a blockchain and it would never have to be researched again, theoretically, save a great deal of work. But it seems like, I don't know if established ways of doing this professional credentialing or the fact that just because somebody, there's no central body who enters the data into a blockchain, it says we certify this is accurate information. So the trust really hasn't made its way out to that that use case. You have any thoughts about that? I could be totally wrong. What do you think, Kyle?
So there are a couple firms that are looking at that. Yes. And that have made some progress, right, getting after that specific use case, ProCredX being one of them. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, these problems are, you know, or these challenges, I'll say, in healthcare are challenges for a reason, right? They are a big lift. And so with that, I think you're not going to see blockchain just immediately solve for any of these, but I think there are, you know, some chipping away at these things. And then a lot of these take kind of growing the network. So you talked about credentialing. There's a lot of sources of that credentialing information. And there's different aspects of the sources. And then there's also the compliance aspect around that. And so I think that trust aspect is going to take some time to build and to demonstrate for these organizations, you know, as they're utilizing these types of services before they're going to be ready to adopt and, I think, mm-hmm. go to a larger scale and create even more value. But I think there's progress being made, but it is, you know, I think at a different speed than people would like to see it.
Yeah, I've always thought that's a fantastic use case. And you know, in the computer world, we saw essentially, I don't know if it's when IBM came in with their PC word processor, but in 1 year, all major corporations got rid of most of their typewriters and got IBM PC word processors. It literally happened in 1 year across the country. And so evidently, it's not happened that fast with blockchain. Do you think that there is any kind of suspicion of blockchain because it's, with this association with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? Do you think there's any negativity with that association?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of misunderstandings, misconceptions, you know, from things that people have heard, whether it be, you know, that, you know, there's nefarious activity that opens the door to, or even energy consumption. I think as you dig deeper, you know, you see, you know, some more information around that nefarious activity being a very, very small part, you know, of what's occurring. Right. And also that it's a platform that's being used, and it's being used for good. And then there's some people who are going to use it for bad, like cash, you know, and fiat, or like email, right? People are going to use it how they choose to use it. And I think the maturity around defending against those things continues to grow. And then you look at kind of energy consumption being another one. There's a lot of energy that goes to waste, that now I think is being used by some of these, you know, really thrifty folks that are out there finding ways to grab and capture that loss of energy that would have just went away, and now use that, you know, to mine different things. And so, again, getting back to your question, I do think there are some misconceptions that are out there. But then again, I think, you know, people need to be cautious of, you know, what they're being sold, right? I think there, you know, if you look across some of the things that got funding and activities that were out there, there were definitely some charlatans in this space.
Yes.
That were looking to capture upon, you know, people, the excitement. They raised funds and then kind of walked away. And so I think people should be prudent with these decisions and really make sure that it is, you know, adding value, and likely that the technology is just a part of that, right? The shared governance, the incentive model, all these other things need to go into that to make that successful and absolutely more of a community activity than just kind of, oh, we're going to throw this technology at it and it's going to solve something for us.
Well, and certainly most of the blockchain use cases that I'm aware of in healthcare are not open blockchains where anybody can write to those blocks. They're really permission-based systems with different nodes in them, as opposed to with the Bitcoin blockchain, anybody can be a node in that. And be part of maintaining that blockchain. I would think such things as the supply chain, especially around pharmaceutical supply chain, there seems to be some real potential there. Again, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on it, but the fact that smart contracts could be employed. So when documentation is made or bar scan is scanned and something arrives at a certain point, then payments immediately issued or invoices are immediately issued. Those kind of a private, again, blockchain, but with smart contracts that execute along that path. What are your thoughts about that, especially around pharmaceutical supply chains?
I mean, I definitely think there's an opportunity there. I believe there's been a couple different consortiums and products that have been built focusing on that. Farmer Ledger being one, Chronicle being another. So I think there's opportunity. I personally haven't stayed as close to the activity that's going on there, but my understanding is they continue to make progress.
I think it's a great area. I don't know the date, but I know there is some type of federal regulation that has a deadline that has to do with the electronic tracking of medications in a supply chain. Hopefully keep out counterfeit medications and diversions of of drugs, things like that. And that it would seem like a blockchain would be would really solve some of those issues. You know, it's kind of like there may be such already entrenched processes in play that it's going to take more than just a better mousetrap to you know, to turn things over.
Right. I agree. I think that there is, you know, kind of not just a need to consider new ways of working and to bridge that gap from the, you know, already existing solutions, but also raising the awareness and education about what blockchain is, what some of these decentralized technologies do, and this wave that's being referred to as Web3 now, and the applicability of that, and kind of how will that play out, and where you can use it, and how you can get hands-on with it. And I think what we're seeing more and more receptivity to those types of things, but I do think it's going to take some time. And since this is, you know, a, really a network effect, you know, that, that's needed to realize the value, you know, that that education aspect is really, really important across healthcare.
For those members of our audience that have just joined us, my guest today is Kyle Culver. Kyle is the director of Emerging Technologies at Humana and co-founder of the Synaptic Health Alliance, and we're talking about blockchain and healthcare today. One thing that's really changed quite a bit, I'd say over the last maybe 4 years, Kyle, 4 years ago, if somebody wanted to do a project based around blockchain, they'd have to go try and find some experts to do a minimum viable project. But in certainly in the last 4 years, there are actual companies out there that, for lack of a better term, have blockchain as a service. I know I did some projects not too long ago. I used a company called Kaleido and set up blockchains and, you know, was able to see if a use case was particularly viable. In this case, it turned out it was not the best use case, blockchain, but it saved me a lot of time being able to kind of run some scenarios. So it looks like the technical aspects of it, certainly for small scale testing, have it's a lot easier for people to test now different use cases.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the maturity has grown a lot in the services that are offered. I still think there's a lot of demand for those services. Certainly, if you're trying to get, you know, consulting on that and trying to do, you know, some of those activities with professional services. But the tool set has also grown a lot. The open source tool set, you mentioned Kaleido, you know, the Hyperledger Firefly, you know, contribution that they have there. There's a lot of things that are growing. And continuing to get more and more mature and making, you know, that adoption curve, you know, a lot easier for people that are trying to onboard to these new technologies.
You know, there, the whole concept of blockchain technology, which certainly there were white papers based on this kind of stuff years back, but in some ways, it kind of dropped out of the sky. It certainly wasn't a concept that was developed one step at a time, you know, over 50 years with a lot of people involved with it. I don't know if you would agree with that, but that's what it seemed like to me. You know, there was a few folks and then the guy or entity or whoever did the Bitcoin blockchain. And suddenly everybody was thinking about, wow, this concept of having a record that could not be changed, and everybody had to agree to the validity of it to, again, move trust out into really computer code, for lack of a better term. It seems like a revolutionary step in some ways more than an evolutionary step. What do you think about that? Am I overstating the radical nature of the technology?
Well, it's not just, I think the technology opens the door to a lot of other very interesting things. Mm-hmm. So decentralized technologies, as you were mentioning, have been around a long time, but kind of putting some of these pieces together, you know, and then seeing the type of different governance models, like decentralized governance, as well as, you know, the incentive mechanisms that are now controlled by the community versus by a centralized entity, mm-hmm. and the opportunity, you know, that opens up. You know, you see with the crisis in Ukraine, people being able to use crypto, you know, to get cash, but that they wouldn't have been able to get their fiat out in the same way. And so you see these types of things that are very interesting and just different. And so, granted, I don't think they're going to solve all the problems, but I think it gives another avenue, you know, to collaboration, you know, as we talk about the B2B space and looking at, you know, before there was this barrier of who's going to own it and how can we trust who's going to own it. That's very different than the community is going to own it. Mm-hmm. However, you know, with a different, you know, with a change, now you have different problems, right? How do you manage the community? How do you educate the community, right? There are different things that come along with this that, you know, we need to continue to learn about, and then also the tooling, you know, to needs to mature to be able to coordinate activity and information across that community. But yes, I do think there's going to be a lot of change that this brings on. And I think that that's accurately reflected when people are talking about this is, you know, Web3 and that moving from, you know, Web1 being just the read and Web2 being the read and the write, and now Web3 being the read, write, and own. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and I think we're just starting to learn about the applicability to things outside of the finance industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, finance industry, wow, what a great source of use cases there for blockchain. And certainly a complex company, maybe a company that's making ventilators or cars or large hospital systems that are doing, you know, patient care and billing and inventory and everything else. How would they possibly find out where a blockchain enabled system may bring efficiencies to what they're doing in one area or not? Where would folks even find out about that?
I mean, I think it takes, you know, kind of getting hands-on with some of the technologies, looking at other use cases and seeing if there's a parallel mm-hmm. to the things that we see in healthcare. I mean, very generically, what we see is that, you know, that this data exchange with competitors, with people, entities you may not trust, to bring transparency to that, keeping track of a shared ledger, having an audit trail. These are all things where, you know, the accessibility, I think the big thing, we're used to sharing data. We know how to share data, but the accessibility of everyone having the same data as well as being able to share logic is different, right? And so there being a smart contract that allows us now to all share the logic and have access to execute that logic and see how it works is different than you throwing data in API and having it spit back a result, but the logic behind that being a black box.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, one thing that's fascinating to me, of course, in healthcare delivery, probably the number one word we hear all the time is interoperability. For at least 10 years, now we've got the new TEFCA program to try and move interoperability of healthcare data. So it's available at the right place at the right time for the right patient. It's going to be fascinating to see if blockchain can bring some of its unique characteristics to interoperability. I think that's a tale that hadn't been told yet.
I agree. I think there's a lot of things to learn there. To me, what I think it can do is help point to where the data is. Mm-hmm. So everyone's now bringing to bear their APIs. Right, they're using FHIR and those things to make sure we know what we're going to get when we call the APIs, as well as how to interact with them, which is all great. But there's a lot of sources of information, and being able to connect to them and know which data silo has what data, and what I'm going to expect when I go and get that data, I think it's something the blockchain can really help connect the dots on, as well as the audit trail around, you know, consent and who's accessing what data, and potentially the ledger activities if there's an exchange of value, to be able to go and get that data, you know, at cost.
You know, one thing I'm really glad about relative to all these issues, Kyle, is that we're past the excited hype of blockchain in healthcare. And it's down just to the real work now where things get done. And that's where we needed to be. It's hard to believe, but Kyle, we're almost totally out of time here. Is there some way if folks want to get in touch with you? Do you have a Twitter handle we need to know about, or maybe just look for you on LinkedIn? What's the best way if folks want to reach out to you?
Sure. I'm on LinkedIn. You can look at Kyle Culver there and find me, or Kyle M. Culver all together is my handle on Twitter. I'm there as well. So feel free to reach out, you know, via either mechanism.
Well, great. To our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Take Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest today, Kyle Culver. Kyle, thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.